This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence.
Dear Prudence. Do you think that I should contact him again?
Help.
Help.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again, and as always, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. With me in the studio this week is Rachel Herron, the best-selling author of almost 20 books, both fiction and memoir, and a person who is proud to be a New Zealander as well as a U.S. citizen, although her Kiwi accent only comes out when she's very tired or very drunk. I don't believe you are either of those things at the time.
I am mostly neither right now.
Fantastic. So. Rachel, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations on writing not 20 books.
Yeah,
what's it going to take to get you to 20?
Finishing the thriller that is about to kill me.
Is that going to be number 20?
Yeah, no, that's going to be 19. Number 20 is also mostly in the can, though.
Nice. So, okay, so you've got a plan to hit 20.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And then you can just walk around saying things like...
I should just say 20, because who challenges you on that, really?
I mean, me, clearly. I straight up was like, you haven't written 20 books. What's this almost business?
Failure.
That is amazing.
It's pretty cool.
What of the 20 was like the most difficult book to write? Was it number one?
Number one was okay because I accidentally got it right. Number two, when I was under contract and I had 6 months to write a book instead of the 2 years I'd spent writing the first book.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one where the editor came back to me. She said, well, you are a great writer, but you have no plot. You must learn now how to write a book because the first one was an accident.
This is so much why I'm sort of hoping I can keep sending book proposals to my agent and never write a novel. I just sent off my third one, which I was very jazzed about. It is super not a novel and it does not have a plot, which is great. But the title does come from an episode of The Simpsons. So
can you share that on the air?
Probably, sure. I mean,
working title is?
Yeah, I'm sure I shouldn't, but like also who
we'll
cares?
All forget.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, who yeah. cares? So it's a line from Lionel Hutz, who's a lawyer that The Simpsons are always hiring. And the line is something that may shock and discredit you. So
I pretty much love that.
I pretty much love Lionel Hutz. The late, great Phil Hartman voiced him. It was from this episode where he was defending Marge, and he tried to disparage somebody else's photographic memory by saying, what kind of tie am I wearing? And they, like, name the tie, and he turns around. He's very obviously taking his tie off, and he says, oh, really? Is that what you think? Well, if that's what you think, then I have something to tell you, something that may shock and discredit you, and that is as follows. And then he turns around. I'm not wearing a tie at all. And it felt appropriate, so I stole it.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So, everything crossed.
Yeah. I hope to one day write 20 books. I hope none of them ever have a plot. I hope
that you'll be a literary success.
We can just hang out in coffee shops and be like, we've written 20 books. That's all we need to talk about is the number 20 and anything
related.
I'm
going to get a t-shirt.
Absolutely. That's fabulous. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it so much.
Of course.
A while back, I had just mentioned in my tiny letter, which is like an email newsletter I send out periodically when the whim strikes me, that I'm always looking for guests, especially guests in the Bay Area, because it's so fun to have somebody physically in the studio with me so that we can make faces at each other. And
I believe I wrote you an email that was like, I have done all these really cool things and I'm a wreck and please take me on your your show, and you're so gracious.
Yeah, I was just like, yeah, anybody wants to volunteer to just like step up and give people advice, I'm here for it.
I'm here.
All right. Well, let's dive right in.
Cool.
I'm going to go ahead and read our very first letter, which means that you get to read the second, and
excellent.
So on and so on.
Excellent.
And the subject line of this one is simply battling overheard sexism. Dear Prudence, yesterday my wife and I were out for dinner at a small restaurant, and we're seated just a couple of feet away from two men who are making sexist comments. At first, we rolled our eyes and went on with our own conversation. Toward the end of the meal, the men started talking about how women over a certain age are still attractive, but more, quote, willing to do anything. They talked about the things they would do to them, the women that they wouldn't touch, etc. It got vulgar and gross. We were almost done eating, so I silently finished my last couple of bites, then stood up and got us out of there. Should I have done more? We'd had a whole evening planned, but after we left, my wife said she felt anxious and just wanted to go home. If they had been talking in our direction, I would have made it known that this wasn't okay, but I didn't know what the wait staff could do, and since we were at separate tables, I felt we should just ignore them. I understand this is easier for me, a man, than my wife. I made sure to make it clear to her that what they said was not okay, but should I have said it to them?
Ick.
Yeah, that sounds really unpleasant. I'm really sorry that you were just trying to eat like a club sandwich or whatever, and somebody nearby was like, here's stuff I would do to old women and not other women.
Because they'll take it.
No. Apparently, they're just, you know. Yeah. No, and this is tricky because this is like, it's vulgar, it's disgusting, it's sexist. I can understand how different people have different criteria for what merits engaging with a stranger in public. And so I can understand how one person might say, you know, if they're discussing something violent or illegal or that is harassment or assault, I would say something. And if it was simply the sort of, unfortunately, garden variety sexism that's just gross and disgusting and thinks of women as sex objects and nothing else, then I might not want to get into it with a stranger. So, I don't know, listening to this, that there was something that jumped out at me where I was like, absolutely, you had a moral imperative to say something and you absolutely failed. So if that's helpful, there's that. But yeah, that sounded awful. Do you have any thoughts? Does it feel like, would you have said something? Would you have wanted, if you were with a guy, for him to say something?
It's a terrible situation for them to be in. And I think that this sounds like a good guy. And he made it clear to her repeatedly that what they said was not okay, which is a really important thing to say. But I think his question is, should I have done more? And the only thing that I was thinking of is when we talk about bystander intervention, There's the question that you can present to the person who is feeling the most uncomfortable. And that question is, do you want support from me? Do you want help from me right now? And then she would have gotten to say, and I'm guessing that he didn't do this because it's not said there, but you know, maybe he did. But if she had said, please don't talk to them, I just want to get out of here, I don't want any confrontation, Then it's a really great cue for him to say, you know, this is not okay, I'm sorry, this is happening to you. But if she had decided that she would like his relative standing of male privilege to whap a zinger at him when they leave, like, you know, we're leaving because you guys are just
terrible. Even say something like, this is really sexist and disgusting.
Right.
Like, you don't have to, like, come up with an amazing movie quality comeback and, like, own them.
You made her really uncomfortable. Thanks for that.
Yeah. And not even, like, a sarcastic thanks, because I feel like then it can kind of get into a sort of, like, we're posturing. I think just even, like, a statement of, like, what you're saying is really sexist and you should be ashamed of it.
Yeah.
Because then you don't have to get into that sense, because, like, I'm sure whatever the response to that would not be, my God, you're right, I'm so sorry.
But the response might be to punch, and that's another thing to think about.
Right, yeah. You know, and that's one of those difficult things about something like the sort of sexism that's testing the waters is you don't know if the person who's doing, like, if somebody is willing to, in a public space, start loudly speculating about the sexual availability of women over a certain age and the things that they would or would not be willing to do, presumably not because they wanted to do those things, but because they felt desperate. You don't know if that's also a person who's going to escalate.
Right. And they're not even talking in their direction. So
right.
They had been talking loud enough that the people in their direction would have been being blasted by this too.
Yeah. I'm sure there were a lot of other people, probably including their server, who picked up on some of it and felt really uncomfortable. So I don't necessarily think that you should beat yourself up for doing what you did. I understand why you did it, that you checked in with your wife, that you, you know, spoke with her and said, I'm really sorry that you had to engage in that and I don't like it either. I think it would have also been appropriate, like, as you were leaving, to say something like, this is sexist and disgusting. And to just leave it at that, like, you don't have to get into a battle. You don't have to explain why. You can just call what it is. You can call it what it is and then leave. And that would have been also, I think, an appropriate and a helpful response, even if their response had been to laugh at you or to make a comment at the expense of your masculinity. That would have been okay to do, too. And, you know, you could consider in the future, because don't worry, this will happen again.
Absolutely. This is a learning lesson. You didn't do anything wrong last time. Mm-hmm. You might do something differently next time.
Yes, but yeah, I would say to pay attention to that sense of, I feel internally like something has been left unsaid or unfinished. You know, sit with that and think, okay, in the future, I would like to do something different. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily to, like, provoke a fight, but to say a word of truth.
Yep.
And to just call sexism what it is. And I think that that would be and will be good for you to do. And oftentimes guys like that will not listen to women who say this is sexist and disgusting, and they will listen to another man or are slightly more inclined to. And
or will be surprised by it, surprised enough maybe to listen.
Right.
For
when they're called out by another man, they're like, oh, no, another man. What? Wow. I should take this seriously. And that obviously is sad and painful in its own right. But that is an opportunity to, you know, exercise that male privilege for good. And I'm glad you are considering these things. And I hate to be like, don't worry, you're going to overhear more sexist conversation a lot because society, but you will. And you will have other opportunities to speak up.
Good letter.
Hooray.
I like that one.
Yeah. All right. Take our next one, will you?
Okay. Subject is abandonment. Dear Prudence, my friend Marla, in quotes, had a terrible ex. He had two kids by two different women, couldn't keep a job, and was always broke. Marla thought he hung the moon. Collectively and separately, our group of friends tried to warn her. Marla ignored them or made excuses for him. She called a friend greedy after her ex borrowed a few $100s from him and never paid him back. I took a picture of her ex kissing another girl and sent it to Marla. Marla accused me of stalking her boyfriend to overcompensate for my known neuroses and, quote, they were only friends, end quote. I gave up after that. Marla got her car, finances, and apartment wrecked by him. She nearly lost her job because her ex would come around all the time while she was there and items would go missing. She finally wised up and booted his freeloading butt, but is now bitter that we all abandoned her. Marla and I have a significant history together, but every time she throws herself a pity party, I want to wave my text history under her nose. I am sorry she's in such a bad place, but I have limited sympathy for someone who took a shovel, dug a hole, and jumped down in it. I don't know what or if I should say anything. I have feels.
Do you think that this letter writer should say anything?
I don't think she should. I have this thing about friendships, and I believe that friendships should be, if we can get them to go this way, be equal and caring. There's a voice here. There's this truly unfriendly tone that I pick up, especially in the end of this. She has limited sympathy, and I understand her sympathy has been stretched over the years. But to wave text history under her nose instead of accepting her for who she's trying to be right now, that feels a little harsh. Perhaps Marla is not throwing a pity party. Perhaps she's just thinking about how she wants to do things differently. It just really doesn't sound like Marla is a good friend, period, at all.
Yeah, but do you think that there is something in between saying nothing and waving the text in history under her nose and sort of saying like something really unkind? Like, do you think there's anything in between that the letter writer can do?
Like what?
Spoiler alert, I do think there's something that the letter writer can say. And it is neither coming from that place of you completely brought this on yourself.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, you were just garbage, and everybody was right to abandon you, and you're a jerk now.
That can't help.
No, that won't help. And, you know, any time that you speak to someone from a place of contempt, it's going to be pretty hard to connect or listen or understand or share. And it sounds like Marla was in a terrible relationship. Based on what you've written here, I don't know that I would say it sounds like he was abusive towards her, but I would just say keep an open mind. That's, you know, sometimes when a relationship just looks really messy from the outside, I would encourage you to, when you have contempt in your heart for her, to respond to it with curiosity and to talk a little bit about, or to ask her a little bit about, like, what was it like for you in that relationship? Did you feel like, you could trust him? Did you feel safe? Did you try to leave him previously? And what was that like? Like, to get some more information about what life was like for her on the inside of that relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say assume that she was victimized, assume that she didn't make any of these choices of her, you know, own volition, and completely sweep it all under the rug. But I think it will help reduce some of that contempt if you kind of ask those questions and say, what does it feel like now to be outside of that relationship? You know, what, if anything, have you learned from it? Do you feel like you wish you had done it sooner? Are you glad that you did it when you did? I want to know. And then I do think you can say, you know, when she says, I feel like I was abandoned, you don't have to say, like, you shouldn't feel that way, or no, you weren't abandoned.
Yeah.
You were just a bad friend and everyone was right to leave you. But I think you can say, here's what it looked like from our perspective. He treated you really badly. He took financial advantage of you. He lied. He cheated. And that was so sad for us to see, because we want better for you. And when we tried to talk to you about it or to share that information, you didn't want to hear it. And so a lot of us got to a point where we felt like, okay, I can't support this relationship because I don't trust or like or respect this guy. But I don't know how to speak to Marla about it because she seems really committed to him in a way that makes it impossible to be honest with her. And so a lot of us were in a really difficult position. And that doesn't mean you should feel good. Like, that doesn't mean you have to, like, just accept that everyone walked away and feel fine about it. But it was painful for us. Mm-hmm. We did not want to walk away from you. We felt like that was our only option.
My only concern is for our writers. There's just this touch of perhaps she wants a little bit of vengeance, and perhaps she, it would be great if, dear writer, you let that go. I don't think you're going to be able to prove to Marla that she did anything wrong if Marla doesn't want to hear that.
Right.
You don't have any responsibility to back up the way you felt then or the way you feel now. You don't have to weigh the text history and prove to her what a bad job she did in that last relationship. Mm-hmm. Maybe sit back and see what happens in the future, and be accepting of what Marla chooses to believe of that past relationship.
Yeah, and it is also fair to say, if you truly feel like Marla is not able to listen what this was like for any of you, and if you feel like all she wants to do is blame everybody else for how she feels now, and you do have very limited sympathy for that, and you can't find another way to connect or a way to talk about it in a way that feels helpful, you know, maybe you will take a step back.
Yeah.
And that's sad. But it's also, you know, she's out of that relationship.
Huzzah.
Which
that's
I'm
good.
Very glad to hear. And, you know, she may need to find a different way forward in her future. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's worth trying to have that conversation. It's worth testing the waters. It's worth saying, I'm a little anxious about talking about this with you because I'm afraid that you'll get defensive and angry with me. And I want you to know that I do care about you. And I'm very, very glad that you're not with him anymore. I think you deserve so much better. And if you can get somewhere with that sort of foundation, then that's really great and meaningful. And if she just absolutely shuts down and doesn't want to hear it and just says, nope, I did everything right and you all just abandoned me because you're not good friends. You know, there's not a lot you could do with that.
But so you did your best.
Yeah,
that's a really good place to stand.
Yeah. And I would say before you do that, maybe do some of your venting out, right?
Yeah.
Get out of your system that, like, and I'm just mad and these are all the things I've cataloged that she did mm-hmm. wrong, so that you are not coming to her with this laundry list of grievances.
That can be set off by one thing that she says.
Right.
You don't want to accidentally turn that on.
Right.
If you're trying to repair and salvage this relationship.
Right. Because again, like, you know, again, it's not like there's some big smoking gun, but like, it sounds like he wrecked her apartment. And like, I don't know, does that just mean he was always there and like was a total slob? Or does that mean that he like destroyed her things in anger and
yeah.
she possibly did not feel safe to leave him? So if that is a possibility,
that's a very good point,
then I think harshness and contempt will only further mm-hmm. to isolate her
right.
and possibly put her in a situation where she would get back together with him.
Right.
Not that you should feel responsible.
Of course.
For that. Gosh, boy, I'm hedging all of my conversational bets today.
I think that's safe.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. But yeah, I would say basically you have a right to say, I felt like I had to take a step back because you were not able to hear me when I tried to express my concerns to you in that relationship. I'm also aware I was not inside that relationship. I do want to know more about how you felt and whether or not you were safe. I love you and I care about you. I did not whimsically or frivolously abandon you just because I didn't like your boyfriend. I thought the way he treated you was awful, and it caused me pain to see you in that relationship. And I may not have responded to it perfectly, but I just want you to know you have always had my love, but it was really hard to watch you go through that. And hopefully you guys can find some way forward through that.
I hope so too.
And hopefully that guy just stays far away because he sounds like no good. All right. Next letter. It's all you.
Is that me? Okay. Yeah.
This one's great. This one, by the way, originally started with a whole thing of like, I know this sounds fake, but it's not. And I was like, this does not sound fake at all. This sounds entirely plausible.
This one stressed me out.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't wait. All right. The subject is unholy donations. Dear Prudence, I work for a nonprofit, and several times per year, I solicit donations from local businesses to use in fundraisers like auctions and raffles. My issue is not how to ask for donations, but how to politely refuse them. We're located in an area with lots of metaphysical stores and practitioners, including astrologers, tarot readers, etc., aplenty, and many of these people kindly offer to donate their goods and services without even being asked. The trouble is that my boss is a fundamentalist Christian who refuses to allow such things into our fundraisers. Some of these donations are worth quite a bit of money. For example, recently a psychic donated a gift certificate for a session worth $250. My boss, however, said that, quote, Satan works through people like that, and instructed me to tear it up and throw it in the trash. At some point, I'm sure the psychic will wonder, or perhaps he already knows, why his donation was not used and why he was never officially thanked. My boss is adamant that I should refuse all such donations by saying that we're a Christian organization, but I fear that would only create hurt, discord, and engender a bad reputation for our nonprofit. Our umbrella organization was founded as non-denominationally Christian, but they work with people of all belief systems, do not discriminate, and strive to be inclusive. I personally practice aspects of many religions and do not believe that any of these metaphysical practices are wrong or immoral. I believe strongly in our organization's mission, but not in the devil. So how do I say no without looking like a hypocrite, hurting feelings, or making us look bad?
Before we get into the sort of nitty-gritty of it, I just really like the idea that Satan's primary outlet is, like, psychics. Like, Satan just loves operating right off of a freeway or in small rooms over storefronts.
Yes.
Just real small-scale petty stuff. Just, like,
little neon signs just blinkety-blink.
Yeah. Like,
dragging them in.
Satan is hung up on, like, petty stuff when there's, like, way bigger things out there that Satan could be working through.
I'm also like curious, where are all these metaphysical stores and practitioners? I mean, she must be
Berkeley,
right?
Oh, I assume this is in Sedona.
Oh.
I'm totally picturing Sedona. Like just everybody's trying to be like, oh, I'll take you on a free tour of the vortex or whatever. And their boss is just like, oh, Satan is...
Get behind me.
Man.
Oh. Well, I loved this one.
Yeah, this sounds totally plausible. I do not think this is fake.
I do not think it's fake at all.
I can absolutely believe this going down at somebody's office. What's your take on this?
My take is, I was thinking about it. I don't know why it stressed me out. Maybe I have been on the asking for nonprofit money way too many times. Mm-hmm. So it triggered me. But my idea is always, usually I try in my life, this is how I normally do things, and it's not the best way, so I'd like to advocate against it. I try to think of a polite lie to dissemble my way out of it, and then I realize, oh, that's going to be just too hard. I might as well tell the gosh darn truth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But my gut reaction to this was like, just don't tell him. Just don't tell him you're not using it.
Wait, and then, what if the boss shows up at the fundraiser and like tears it out of somebody's hands?
And well, of course, that was where my brain went to next. My next thought was, well, then I'm going to have a really good lie for that. And that's where my brain always kicks in and goes, no, Rachel, the truth is best. The honest gosh darn truth. So it is, I don't know. It seems like a pretty simple answer to me. And I want to hear what you think too, but just saying, because she is the person who solicits and accepts these donations, it seems like a pretty simple answer just to say to these people, thanks so much for this offer, but this year we're only accepting solicited donations. And, you know, and if it makes her feel better, if it makes you feel better, writer, to say, you know, but I'm making myself a mental note, your psychic services sound super cool. If I ever need somebody, I'm going to come to you, but we're going for solicited donations.
That seems
this
unnecessary.
Year.
That seems like trying to make up for an implicit sense of guilt by pretending to be interested in something that you maybe
putting
don't care
myself
about.
In her shoes.
Yeah. So that's definitely a great response. Like, if you really just want to stick with solicited donations, you can absolutely. Yep. That's a fabulous line to offer. It's 100% true.
Exactly.
It's also a little tricky because it's unclear to me whether or not your nonprofit is a religious organization or whether it simply has ties to a like vaguely religious organizations. Because it's like either this is a private company that has some religious connections where maybe it is company policy to do some things that you may personally disagree with, or it's not, and your boss is bringing his personal religious beliefs into the workplace in a way that's actually both inappropriate and possibly a violation of company policy. So I think one thing that may prove helpful is to try to get clarity on that. I don't know how big your company is. I don't know if you guys have anything in, like, your HR department. Not that you should go to HR and complain about your boss, but, like, to find out. I'm a little confused about what types of gifts we can and can't solicit. Is there any, like, official document that we have? Is there consensus?
Right.
Like, that would be good information for you to have because, you know, depending on, you know, sometimes if you work for a religious organization but you yourself have different personal beliefs, you have to kind of figure out what's within my purview to change and what do I have to decide to kind of let go? But then if your boss is genuinely just bringing his personal religious ideals into a secular workplace, I think it's appropriate and fair to ask for more clarity, check with other people in the office, possibly somebody higher up. And not to say that you should be like sending emails being like, I think my boss is being a zealot and I want to undermine him. But to say like, I'm genuinely unclear on what our policy is as a company. Do we have one? And if not, would we want to get one?
Right. And that's a CYA for yourself, too, because as you are soliciting, who's to say that you don't accidentally solicit the devil when you get a donated car? You know, or whatever it is you get there, it might be really helpful to have that kind of policy in hand.
Right. So, you know, I think that's worth pursuing. You will, you know, your boss better than we do. If you have a sense that there would be potential retaliation, it sounds like he's a fundamentalist and already brings his religious views into the workplace more than is appropriate, even for your workplace, you know. Bear in mind that we do not want you to get fired over this. So look out for yourself first and foremost. But if you think that that there is a chance that there is, in fact, company policy about this or could be, or that your boss's bosses would want to know.
Right.
Because you're not telling on him. You can simply say, so here's my situation. Sometimes we get these donations sent to us. And I know that, you know, boss doesn't like them. But I'm not sure if we have a policy about this. Can somebody help me find out more?
Yeah.
And that's just very clearly saying, here's my problem. I'm not sure.
And because she calls it a couple of times or he calls it an organization and the organization has a mission, I bet that there is something somewhere written down.
Yeah.
There's a high likelihood.
Yeah.
And if there's not, maybe there should be.
Yeah. And if there's not, like if what happens is you ask that question, your boss helps create the policy and the policy is no psychics, I'm sorry.
I'm going to rip those up and put them in the trash.
But at least then there will be a stronger sense of here's what we do as a company rather than this one guy's personal animus towards astrology or tarot or whatever is driving it.
But it does sound like you really like your job.
Yeah.
And you believe in the mission. And it sounds like you are a kind person who is trying to do the right thing. And if you just want to keep it simple, it is okay just to say, we are only accepting solicited donations.
Yeah.
Thanks for your offer.
Yeah. So that's true. You do have at least one kind of simple strategy for it. By the way, I would welcome hearing from anybody who's more experienced in stuff like, I don't know, employment legislation. The freedom of religious expression in private companies, anybody who's worked at a company where something similar happened, psychics. If anybody has like more
we would like to know that devil connection.
Or knowledgeable thought about this,
We
would love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next letter. Please, take it away. I've heard enough of my own voice today.
Okay, you're going to laugh at me, though, but I don't have that letter. You didn't send it to me.
Oh, it's a voicemail. That's why. It is a voicemail. But this one is just called Exploitative Workplace. So neither one of us gets to read it. We'll hear somebody else's voice.
Fresh.
Dear Prudence, I work for a large healthcare organization. Technically, my title is secretary, but I also do graphic design work. I have been doing graphic design work for the fundraising arm of our organization for the last 4 years since I started there. At first, it was fun. I enjoyed doing things that reminded me of my past history of working in graphics and animation and, frankly, making more money than I do now. So it was never a problem to whip out little jobs for people. However, the person who is the head of the fundraising department has become more and more demanding of my time. On Friday, I had to drop everything that I was doing and work uninterrupted for about 5 hours on a job that she needed for Monday morning. And she held it over my head that she was going to call the head of our corporate division and complain if I did not do this job for her. The deadline was just about impossible, but I did it. I feel like I'm being pushed into an uncomfortable situation. I don't like the feeling of being basically blackmailed by a threat to call corporate, and I don't know what to do. I'm not being paid anything extra for this work, and I feel like my own creativity has boxed me into a place where I can no longer say no. I'm at my wit's end, Prudence, if you could help me.
You sound like you're at your wit's end. I'm so sorry.
Oh, man. That sucks.
Yeah. This guy sounds like a jerk.
This company sounds like a jerk. You do not sound like a jerk, though.
Yeah. What do you think? What do you think they can do?
I would love for you to look at your job description and remind you again, remind yourself again of what you are hired for, what you're paid for. It sounds like you have really enjoyed helping in the past. And now that urge to help your corporation, this large health company, is biting you in the ass. Did the caller make it clear if she's not getting paid any extra, but she's not doing this for free? She's doing this on the company dime.
Doing this on company time, but right. Certainly, like, it may very well be preventing her from getting her actual listed job duties done. I'm curious, who is your boss?
Yeah.
Like, you don't mention your own supervisor. If you have one and they're supportive, I think you should absolutely, like, go to them and say, you know, here's how much time I have to get my own duties done in the week. Periodically, someone will ask me to do something. And while I'm often happy to help, they will sometimes offer me deadlines that get in the way of the job duties you hired me to do. You know, what do you want me to say about those? And if you have a good boss, you know, hopefully they will say, you know, you can push back and say, I won't be able to do that. And if they have further questions or they get upset, they can talk to me.
It sounds like she has that extra wrinkle, though, that you kind of love doing this. So if you say, no, I don't want to do this extra work, then will you never be able to help in graphics again, which is something that you liked to help with?
Yeah. And you don't have to say, like, I don't want to do it. You can just say, I take this on when I have the time. I don't have the time right now.
Right.
And frankly, like, if you know your own job description,
And this, it is there somewhere. This is a large company. Yeah. It is written out. I bet it says nothing about graphics.
And this person
design.
Says, I'm going to call the head of the corporate division. If you don't, you can just say, go for it.
Please do.
Absolutely. And then if they ask me, I will say, here is my job description. Periodically, I take on additional, volunteer work, helping out with graphic design. I'm not always able to do so because I'm doing the job I was hired to do.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a pretty strong position.
Yes.
I think it can feel hard when somebody who, like, technically outranks you, like, abuses their rank like
yelling
that.
Yelling at you? Yeah.
But she actually does not have anything on you.
Right.
And unless you work at, like, a really messed up company where you would get in trouble for doing extra work on the side that's helpful. I hope either your boss or this, you know, hypothetical head of corporate whatever would see pretty clearly, yeah, this person has an actual job they have to do.
Right.
And they don't have time for your problems.
And you say it really clearly. You absolutely know what the problem is. And using that kind of truth with whoever you are going to talk this over with is going to work for you.
Yeah. And of course you get to say no. Please don't feel like the fact that sometimes you've said yes means you have to say yes all the time to everyone. You know your own schedule. You know how much time you need to get your like listed job duties done in a week. If you have time on top of that, and if your boss is okay with it, you can, you know, according to your own discretion, take on some additional work when you feel like it.
If you want to.
And if you don't have the time, frankly, even if you do have the time, but you don't want to, you can say, I'm not able to do that. Good luck.
Perfect.
Yeah. And this person sounds like a jerk.
I know. I'm really glad that we don't work for that person.
I
hope that you don't work for that person ever. Like, that's just a peripheral person.
Yeah, but you absolutely get to say no. This person is not your boss. This is not your job description.
And you don't have to feel guilty about it.
No, you are not. And like...
At all.
Yeah. And the fact that you've done some of this previously does not mean that you are now, you know, committed to doing it forever whenever anyone wants it. Mm-hmm. So, you're doing great. And I'm really sorry that this person is being such a jerk to you.
Rachel,
what a treat, Mallory.
Oh, my goodness. We really ran the gamut of emotions today.
My emotions are, like, so soothed and also so, I just want to go out on the street and start hugging people.
I feel
just in case they need a hug.
A combination of, like, heightened and purified. Like, we have been through some sort of catharsis together, and now I have to find a new way to live in the world.
I need like, a fizzy, bubbly drink.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dillon. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/dearprudence to subscribe. And remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR, that's 3327, and you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short. 30 seconds, a minute tops. Have you checked out Slate's Represent? If not, you should. Every week, smart and creative people join Slate culture writer Aisha Harris to discuss the latest film, TV shows, and happenings in Hollywood. Download and subscribe to Slate Represent on your podcatcher of choice for thoughtful conversations on race, gender, sexuality, and more with critics and thinkers. Woo! We're done?